You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, unfortunately, my co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, is unable to be with us today, but we will still continue to address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools and programs and new innovations that can help you and your family find greater peace and joy together. Now, with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, before I bring on our guests, I want to share some information about two teens and the organization that helped them. Now, we all know that it can be tough being a teenager growing up today. Many teens make dangerous choices, including substance abuse and breaking the law. Others suffer from intense emotional or psychological struggles. And effective treatment is available out there. It is available for our teens. But unfortunately, it is not affordable to many families. Now, fortunately, Saving Teens was founded in 2004 to help these children and their families by assisting deserving families with finding and funding long-term treatment as well as aftercare counseling when the child returns home. And here are a couple of stories of teens who have benefited from Saving Teens. The first is that at the age of 15, Michael already had arrests on his record. He was abusing drugs. He was truant from school. And when his mother contacted Saving Teens, he was on his way to jail for breaking probation. Michael's mom knew there was help available, but it was financially out of her reach. Saving Teens placed him in a 12-week wilderness program to evaluate his long-term needs and provided the funding. Now, this was followed by placement in a therapeutic school to continue his education and his long-term recovery. Today, Michael is more than 6 months sober. He is focused, he is engaged at school, and he has a vastly improved relationship with his family. Now, at 14 years old, Vanessa, who was diagnosed with both post-traumatic stress disorder and reactive attachment disorder, with difficulty relating to others or expressing her emotions, she had turned to self-injury and, at times, blind rage. Her family did not have the resources to afford the 12 to 18 months of specialized treatment that she needed. Several months ago, Saving Teens placed her in a school where she is making great strides both therapeutically and socially. Two teens and their families, which are really just two examples of more than 70 who have been helped by Saving Teens since 2004. They have continued to help adolescents whose future prospects have been significantly improved. Now, their selection as the official choice for the National Association of Therapeutic Schools and Programs, which is NATSAP, gives Saving Teens the ability to help many more families. It is also, it has official recognition of the quality of the work and of the process they use for selecting appropriate families and the most effective treatment for those particular kids. Now, Saving Teens has significant goals for this upcoming year, including long-term placement for at least 10 more children. Now, a percentage of the funding will come from scholarships. They'll be provided by generous programs, by pro bono educational consultants. There'll be other sources of financial support for families this year that will be generated by fundraising events such as their annual golf tournament. but the most important element of their fundraising comes from individual donors like you who understand the critical importance of every child's life. Your generous donation helps kids like Michael and Vanessa and their families stay healthy and safe. Please help them this year by going online right now at www.savingteens.org. That's saving, SavingTeens.org. Now, you can do that right now because you can just open up another window and still do that during this show, or you can go on immediately after this show. Now, let me tell you a little bit about our guests. Now, our guest today, first, is returning to the show, Brian Pace. Brian was one of the original contributors to the development and start of Red Rock Canyon School in 1999. Brian has been the executive director there since 2004, and he's been leading a team of seasoned professionals in the development of the CARE schools, which include Red Rock Canyon School, Mount Pleasant Academy, Falcon Ridge Ranch, and Lava Heights Academy. Brian earned a master's degree in educational counseling and mental health counseling and has built a reputation as one of the most experienced professionals in the adolescent treatment field. Joining Brian today is Nathan Ming. He is a primary therapist for the organization and has been on the residential treatment stage for just over 5 years. Nathan received his PhD from Brigham Young University and his master's from Seattle Pacific University. His areas of expertise include couple and family therapy, experiential therapy, adolescent and child therapy, substance addictions, and training and supervision of therapists. That's a mouthful. Gentlemen, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Good to be here.
It's good to be here, and I've got a lot of questions because I know you guys have some new programs, but the first one that I want to bring up, and this one is for Brian, I think everybody received the press release that went out, and I just want to know, Brian, why did you use a mugshot, and what did you do to that you had to have a mugshot?
Yeah, I apologize for that. I'm not the most photogenic individual. It's the only one I have in my file at the moment.
I got an email from people that received the press release, and they put a little happy face on it, and it must be somebody that knows you, because they said I'm looking forward to hearing Brian and Nathan on the show, but Brian's picture looks like a mugshot, so wanted to bring that up.
I appreciate that. I've got that feedback a few times. I've got to work on smiling a little bit better. It's softened up a little bit.
I'd say it's hard to get the executive director to sit down for a minute just to take a picture.
There you go.
Yeah. And I haven't seen this one, but I apparently have a few mug shots out there.
Well, this one was a full frontal type of shot.
Okay, great. Maybe I'm unaware of this picture.
So, okay, we're going to be talking about adolescent identity development. And I think the issue really is the teens that are going through, who am I, and we know that it's particularly difficult, but it's also very important, particularly during adolescence. You know, the combination of physical, cognitive, and social changes that occur during that time, topped with, new life changes, and various choices, seems to spur what Erickson termed as identity crisis. So tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing and how you're dealing with the issue of am I.
Nate, do you want to start and lead off with that? We're talking about Heights.
There's a lot going on especially when you're looking at what's happening for the adolescents. Is they're first off, they're moving from an age and a mindset where they're moving from a very concrete form of thought. When they're pretty little, they see that dog, you tell them it's a dog, and so anything that's furry with four legs is a dog. But then as they start growing up, there's a lot more. There's cows, horses, there's different types of dogs. There's, and it's that expanding age. And so you're taking these adolescents when they're already struggling to develop, that it's very abstract the way that our world works. There's a lot of areas of gray. There's a lot of difficulties, and especially with the media and those kinds of things that start to present themselves, just becomes a battle for them to find out not just who they are, but how they should act, how they should respond, what would be appropriate or inappropriate, and just becomes a little bit more of a challenge for them.
Well, you mentioned you started out sort of with comparison to when we're younger and we can recognize a few different animals, and as we get older, the timing of the changes seems to also be at the same time that we start to recognize the opposite sex. How much of this stems from hormonal changes to where, we're just starting to recognize that there is an opposite sex?
Well, and I think, that's all the really interesting, that's a pretty complex question. There is a lot of chemical changes that are going on as they're going through puberty, and you've got not only the things that are going on with them as they're starting to notice or identify or, having these strange feelings starting to well up, you've got all that, plus you've got society trying to tell you stuff, plus, possibly your parents trying to tell you stuff, your friends are trying to tell you stuff, so it's you've got this inner turmoil going on, but you've also got this a lot of this, outside influence that's coming in that, makes it even more of a challenge as to, what's right and wrong, what's okay, not okay, that kind of thing. So it just becomes a little bit bigger of an issue as they're, trying to filter out for themselves what's going on.
And Brian, I know things changed a lot, since we were adolescents. But I mean, what are the current issues that adolescents are, are reported to currently be facing that is so different?
Yeah, nowadays there are a lot of outside social pressures as far as who am I, what's my identity, what's my true identity, going back to our core beliefs or values. Seems to be a lot of outside influences shaping who we are or what we can become. So I believe that the pressure and of who they are and being accepted is greater than when we were younger. It's kind of like an In-N-Out burger type of model. Is you get a burger or a burger. Nowadays, the menu of life is you have so many options to pick from, and they're not quite sure how to pick or where to pick because of all the outside influences of really finding out who they are. Sometimes too many options is a bad thing. So trying to find their identity and where they fit in at all different levels, whether it's the family or in their social networking, education or a sporting team or an extracurricular activity, makes it very difficult as they're trying to figure out who they are and how they fit in based on values and norms and beliefs. They seem to be ever-changing in the world.
Mm-hmm. So now, guys, if it's on our end or if it's on your end, but if you could speak up a little bit, or Ronnie, if you can turn the volume up, because it sounds like we're fading a little bit.
Okay.
So, I think that, for many of the people listening, be it professionals or for parents, a lot of things we first start seeing, obviously, are the struggles that are in the home. So, I mean, what are some of the common issues that lead to these struggles in the home, and what are some of the identifiers that the parents can recognize?
And I can touch base on this, and Nate, you can chime in as well. There's a lot of opinions on this. Some of the things that that I have noticed is an adolescent speaking directly towards the virtual world is students or teenagers, adolescents having a hard time moving from the virtual world to the reality world. And that conflict there is with the parents or with other siblings is that they're not in the virtual world. They're real-life people in front of them, and so their identity online doesn't match their identity within the family role. And so you see some conflict there as they move from that virtual world to the reality world. It creates an immediate conflict because it's not the same. It's a total difference. I can be whoever I am online, and that doesn't transfer into the family role, which causes some issues and conflict is where we start to see quite a bit of that
their way of thinking is different online versus in real life. It's not so much black and white. It's, you know, there's a lot of influences that swim around in that gray area. Is where we're starting to see a lot of that. Nate, what would you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, remember that you kind of made this distinction, Alan, but, you know, everything that we do now, everything that these kids are doing is being published. You know, I mean, you look at the amount of content, and I don't have the stats right in front of me, but the amount of content that's being posted on YouTube, you know, you've got over 1 billion users on Facebook. I mean, there's everything is being published, everything that we're doing now. And so as these kids are trying this out, you know, especially where there's that the differences maybe between what our family wants or, you know, where they fit in with the family and then where they fit in with their friends and then where they fit in online. You know, there's this major conflict that could be going on for them if, you know, everybody's telling them something different and then maybe there's a huge issue in one of those areas. Maybe somebody's gotten online and started making fun of them or started making jokes. And so you have this huge battle that's going on. And the difficulty that I see, the struggle within the family is these kids aren't feeling like they can come home. They're not feeling like there's a safe place because, you know, they go to their friends. Their friends might post it, you know, as a Facebook comment. They might, you know, put something on there that could be damaging. And so there's not that safe place. There's not that security for them if, you know, they're fighting at home plus, you know, their friends and, you know, Facebook and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and I think that brings up a point. I mean, as you were saying that, the thought came to mind is that, you know, I mean, when I was a kid and I came home and I had been at a friend's house, And if the rules were a little different in my house, I would say, you know, well, yeah, but that's not the way it is in Johnny's house. You know, how come we can't have it like it is in Johnny's house? And I would be making one or two references. I mean, the parents would now have to deal with kids that would come in and say, you know, 476,000 kids on Facebook do it this way. Why can't I?
Right.
It's got to be hard to do it.
You know, and Alan, it's, I mean, if you think about it, the reality of can you really have 200 or 400 friends online or in real life? I mean, if you look back, how many friends did you have in your life? Was it 200 or was it one or two or three? But yeah, there's a lot of outside influence, especially through the media.
Right. Yeah.
And it's easy to put whatever you want online. So, you know, I saw the comment, you know, or heard the comment too, you know, none of my friends have chores. Well, yeah, every kid, of course, online is saying that's perfect. You know, that's exactly what we need to use against parents is that, you know, we don't have any chores. We don't have any responsibilities. And that's why these parents should, you know, abandon chores and responsibilities as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and makes it very difficult. Now, I mean, give us some examples of some of the young people that you're working with. Obviously, we're not using any names, but just, you know, an example sort of as a case study of the type of situation that, you know, that your people are being told. Now, somebody, I guess, from an intake standpoint is making a decision, you know, if a particular program and here they are a fit for that program and where were you able to take them from the time in which they started to the time in which they left your program?
Well, we have four different programs. You listed them off before, and so we actually take a wide range of kids. It'd be a little bit harder to nail that down. We take a pretty wide range as far as what's happening, and the example that you used, you know, we'll see a lot of those kids. Typically, what we see at Lava Heights is more, you know, kids that are just starting out. They're just starting to struggle. They're not really sure what's going on for them. They're really battling that identity, and because they're not sure of who they are, they're starting to act out. Maybe they're starting to try some substances. Maybe they're starting to get in trouble, you know, having issues at school where prior to that, you know, they were doing really well. Or, you know, and a lot of times you'll even see, I think of one that, even his friends are saying, you know, geez, you're really starting to act out. What's going on? I mean, you know, he was struggling with the idea of being homosexual. And so, rather than him, you know, finding a safe place to be able to process that, he just started acting out, you know, to the point where even his friends are saying, man, you're just out of control. You got to stop this. You know,
these unhealthy behaviors. And so the idea is to take them and put them in a spot where they feel safe and secure, where they can feel open. They have a means of being able to express themselves, you know, through healthy outlets. We use art, so we use all kinds of art, painting, drums. I teach a ballroom dance class, just whatever we can to help them express and just feel okay and secure about who they are. It's okay to make mistakes, okay to look dumb, it's okay to, you know, and just, you know, let's talk it out rather than, you know, turning to try and act it out or trying to hide or trying to, you know, turning it out into all of these, you know, ineffective coping mechanisms.
I mean, I've been out to the Red Rock Canyon campus, and so I had the pleasure of meeting some of the young people, which was phenomenal because, I mean, these were very bright kids. They were very open. They were very honest as far as sharing with me sort of the, you know, what they were doing in their life that they didn't feel was healthy versus what they were now doing in their life and why they recognize that this was a much healthier way to live. I'm fortunate in the sense that, you know, I'm able to go out and meet some of them, you know, and firsthand. Now with the four different programs, tell us about the differences. I mean, we have, you know, we've got therapists, ed consultants, a lot of people that are listening. So, I mean, does each program cater to a particular type of child or in regards or, you know, a specific sex? How do you guys work that?
Yeah, I'll answer that, Dave. I know you're just chomping at the bit to answer. we've got our four different programs, and obviously the oldest one is Red Rock, and it's a bigger facility, co-ed facility, 12 to 18 years of age. It's more vocationally based and community based. It does deal with adoption students, oppositional defiant conduct disorder students. It's more of that type of student and population that we deal with. It's almost like seven mini treatment centers in one. So it's more community-based and vocational-based. They have their own recording studio. They develop their songs and CDs right here on site. They're active in the community. So we deal with that population here in Red Rock. With Lava Heights, as you mentioned, we're looking more as adolescent identity, some trauma and addiction, as well as getting some neurofeedback and brain mapping for those students as they progress and start to find their identity in real life. With Falcon Ridge Ranch is more equine-based program. It deals with adoption and trauma as well, with the integrated horsemanship and equine ability that they have there on a daily basis. And that is single sex as well. Falcon Ridge is single sex. Lava Heights is co-ed. Mount Pleasant is also a new program of ours. It's dealing with adolescent males for sexual compulsive behavior. They're not sex offenders. These are sexual compulsive behaviors, almost like a non-offender that addiction to porn, some voyeurism, exhibitionism, and just digital addictions they're running into. We follow the Patrick Carnes model quite a bit at the Mount Pleasant Academy. It's kind of an array or short snapshot of what we do in our four programs. Soon to be opening an autistic program as well.
Oh, great. Nathan, I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the measures that can be used in the home with adolescents as they begin developing their identity. What are some of the things that the parents can either recognize or measures that they can take?
Well, one of the things that that I frequently talk to, and I mean, this is, you know, you see this a lot. I hear this every single time, and the parents saying, "Well, I've got an open door policy." But I think, you know, you remember being a kid. When was the last time you were super excited about going in to talk to your parents about sex?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, you're like, yeah, that's the question I'm going to ask. You know, so the open door policy is fantastic. However, kids don't respond that way. Teenagers aren't going to do that. They're not going to come in and confront and address and talk to you about that. They're not going to come in. I mean, unless there's that really strong foundation already, they're more than likely not going to come in and say, you know, today at school, people started calling me a slut, or they started making fun of me, or, things like that. I mean, they're just not going to do it. And so what I tell parents, one of your best measures is to specifically find time. First, each day that you can check in, doesn't have to be a lot, 5 minutes. You can just find out what's going on, who'd you talk to, you know, and, you know, try not to make it the, you know, where you're sitting down and you're, you know, torturing them, trying to dig out the questions. But then also separate some time each week that you can spend with them. And I know that that's a challenge and, you know, it's always difficult, but where you're spending individual time with them so that they know every single week we're going to be sitting down and we're going to be talking about what's going on in life. We're going to talk about, you know, how we're handling, how we're dealing with, or, you know, what's going on, or, you know, what are some of the major issues or concerns. But they know each week we're going to talk. So it's more than just the open door. It's giving them that space. That's one of the first things that I will always say. You see that one frequently. It's just that time. You know, sitting down for a meal together is great. You know, that great time to just check in and, you know, what's going on, what's happening. But that individual time is pretty critical.
Yeah,
I would say there's a lot of – oh, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, I mean, I think that's great because, you know, you're establishing a pattern that they can then be used to and know that it's a place to be safe, that it is something that's going to happen, and that the parents are going to take a parenting role in the sense that they're going to bring up the questions that we know, as you said, the kids really don't want to bring up. I mean, they don't want to talk about this teenager with their parents about sex. But, you know, as parents, we have an obligation. We may not want to have that discussion, but, you know, right at that time, but it still is part of our job to do it.
Yeah, and you can either do it or you can pay me to do it. I mean, that's the difference, right? I mean, well, hey, Nate, if I could chime in, I don't have enough money to pay you, but if the parent is not teaching or being, you know, building that rapport, building that relationship with the student, someone else will be teaching your son or daughter, whether you like it or not, which is, you know, why not be you? Why not be the parent to develop all that and build that relationship? Otherwise, someone else will teach them.
Absolutely.
It may not be what you want.
Yeah, and that's a great point, and it's what we were just talking about. They're going to get it from Facebook. They're going to get it from Google. They're going to get it from, you know, the kids down the street or whatever. You know, they're going to have those conversations. They're going to get that information, and that's what's going to help them figure out who they are, which is the topic that we're talking about right now. Now, we're going to take a break, but again, know that we will be right back. The subject is adolescent identity development. And again, stay right with us. Or you know, the other thing you can do is you can go to the website, and you can also start looking. And you can look at what it is that that Brian and Nathan are talking about if you go to www.careschools.org, and if you pull that up there, you know, you kind of check out some of the four different schools, but at the same time, keep our window open and keep listening, because we will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we are talking to Ryan Pace and Nathan Meng, and they represent the CARE schools. And actually, while we were during the commercial, we got an email that came through, and I'd like to read this to you guys and tell me what you think. This one reads, it says, our 17-year-old son, now a junior in high school, is one of the brightest kids in his school. He had straight A's up until this year when he started dressing in the plumber pants, spiked his hair, the whole bit. Don't see the signs of drugs, and in parentheses it says we actually had him tested 2 months ago, but his grades are dropping. He now states that he wants to wait a couple of years before heading to college. Our hope is that this is just an identity phase, but with his 18th birthday just around the corner and only one more year of high school, we're very concerned. Most of all, we are at a loss as to what to do or say. Should we consider an alternative school? Could that make a difference? Gentlemen.
Hello?
Yeah, Nathan or Brian, what's your thought?
Go ahead, Nate. That kind of faded out there at the end. I didn't quite get all of that. Did you get that?
What was the end? We missed it.
I didn't realize that we got cut off. Bottom line is, it says, you know, with his 18th birthday just around the corner and only one more year of high school, we're very concerned. Most of all, we're at a loss at what to do or say. Should we consider an alternative school? Could that make a difference?
I would say absolutely. And I think that pretty much anything, you know, anything that they're looking at, I think they're dead on by saying that this is part of his identity development. This is definitely some kind of, you know, something's going on, especially if you're seeing that inconsistency where he's doing really, really great in school, and then all of a sudden there's this major change. And it's not necessarily that, you know, and I don't know how the parent feels, but it's not necessarily you need to push them to make sure that they're always getting these excellent grades. But if he's definitely not living up to his potential, that is an issue. That is something of concern where, you know, something is definitely changing, struggling, maybe being ostracized or something like that. I think, you know, first and foremost, it's important that you, you know, figure out what it is that's happening, figure out what's going on, be able to have that open communication as to where he's at, what his thought process is. There's more to it than just he wants a break before going off to school. You know, there's definitely something that's going on. There's a lot of programs. There's a lot of, ways for him to be able to receive help as well. I mean, the options are pretty endless as far as what they can do. I think, you know, when you're looking at programs, you always want to know that they're going to be able to meet your goals. It sounds like education is a goal, so that's something you're going to want to make sure to check into, is that they're going to be able to follow through and you know, help him to get back on track where he's getting those good grades, and whether or not he decides to go to college right away, but he has the option, so that's not taken away from him. So, I don't know if that's helping, but I would say, you know, making sure that we're addressing that and you know, finding a school that's going to help him to confront whatever identity issues have come up, to give him that feeling of safety and security where he can express himself and, you know, say whatever he needs to say, for whatever reason, just get it out in the open and be able to actually discuss it.
And Brian, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I don't. I agree with Nate. I'd like to measure the level of the intervention and find out where it is and intervene at that level. And it may not be a therapeutic boarding school or RTC or an outpatient, but I would first identify the need at that level and intervene at that level. I think oftentimes we mistake and jump to a lot of different areas rather than saying, here's the problem or the issue, let's intervene at this level and then go forward. And obviously he's expressing himself in different ways of dress and academic, all behaviors that he's displaying. He's trying to say something non-verbally that he's struggling with, all behaviors, communication. So to be able to sit down and with someone that is able to talk with him and kind of express that and be able to intervene at that level and move forward. It may not be something that needs to go to an RTC. Maybe something different. So I would definitely, intervene at the right level.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Right. And what you're saying is, I mean, they need to communicate and learn more about what's going on and learn a little bit deeper. And actually, while we're talking about that, I think we know that often when adolescents need help the most is also when they can be the most extremely distant. So how should we approach having an open conversation with an adolescent who is noticeably struggling, but part of their struggle is also making them pull away?
Yeah, that's always a tough one. You know, and I would look around within the family members, immediate and extended, or whomever that may have the best relationship or rapport with that student, to be able to sit down and have a conversation like that, because it is somewhat sensitive. However, I think it's something that needs to be addressed and talked about. How you talk about it, I think, is the key issue, where you're not attacking character, but you're talking about the problem behavior that you're seeing or what's being displayed, and to be able to approach the youth in a respectful manner, and to be able to move and talk about and identify what it is that they're struggling with. I think sometimes as a parent we may be blinded by our love and our impatience of, you know, we got to do this now, and we start to attack the character rather than separate the problem from the personhood, that we need to separate those two and be able to address and work together as finding out, you know, what do we need to work on here? What's causing this issue? What's going on? And to be able to address it in that manner, I think that's can be difficult. It takes a little bit of thought and effort to be put into it rather than just jump in. Sometimes we jump in and want to jump back out because we've done more damage than good, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And I would add, too, that you see there's a lot of tricks with adolescents. You know, that I know it's difficult to communicate with them, but there's a lot of tricks. I would say one of the things I try really hard to do is listen, rather than, you know, the more questions you ask, the more annoyed they're going to get, which is the truth with anybody, you know, but they're just going to be mad because you're doing this inquisition here, and, you know, you're stressing them out. And so I try to repeat back the things that they say in a non-offensive way, you know, just, you know, they say, I had a hard day, and I'll just say, a hard day, really? And then that gives them the opportunity to keep responding rather than me doing the digging. The other big piece that Brian touched on is that non-reactive, you know, I mean, the more, I think the fear that adolescents have is that their parents are going to freak out, they're going to call somebody's parents, they're going to go into the school and talk to them, they're going to get online and try to fix it, and it's going to be embarrassing, it's going to be, you know, turn into this big issue that it doesn't need to be, you know, and as parents, I know it's difficult, but we need to be able to just take it, be calm, you know, be non-reactive, you know, allow them or encourage them to find the answers themselves rather than giving them the answer, you know, helps them feel like they're more supported and comforted rather than, I'm going to go to my parents, I'm going to say this, and then they're going to freak out, and it's going to be worse than it was before.
Okay. Now, we've got another instant, this is an instant message question that's coming over, and this one reads, I'm a high school football coach who has worked with teens for 30 years. Although there are many talented athletes, it is harder and harder to get my kids to work as a team. And the minute they hit the locker room, they whip out their cell phones and hardly speak to each other. It's like a room full of robots without personal identities that like previous generations used to have. What are your views on this?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. Being a coach as well, you know, the social media, the phones, the computer eliminates human interaction, which I think is a huge concern for the world, for our nation, is, you know, lack of human interaction is part of our problem. We don't know our social cues. We don't know how to communicate with each other. And I totally believe the most important intelligence that we have on Earth today is the ability to interact from human to human. And I think the social media takes that away just through a text or whatnot. And so as a coach, from one coach to another, it is difficult to build a team through the computer age. I mean, you still have to be able to face-to-face interaction is what's needed as a team. You can't do it through a device. It doesn't work. That's all, you know, you've got the emoticons and you've got whatever to try to make it work. But in order to function as a team, you need that human-to-human contact and interaction with each other to build that bond. It's not built through a machine. It's not built through the computer. It's not built through the phone. So, you know, you've got to be able to manage that or limit that or monitor however policy or whatever you put in place, team rules, to say, you know, we deal with all things on the table here as a team. We don't do it through our phones. We do it as a team. We group up. We talk about it. However he wants to establish that. For me as a coach, that's not allowed. I just say we're not doing that. This is how we, everything, no secrets, everything on the table as a team. And so, but it is challenging. There's no doubt about it because it's so easy to communicate through a phone or through a computer. It's so easy just to get send it off, and it could cause quite a mess amongst the team culture. And you're trying to develop a team culture face-to-face, human-to-human, not human-to-cell-phone.
Well,
I know I kind of rambled there, but...
I would guess that this is probably, he says he's a high school coach. I would guess that it is a public school high school coach, because my guess is that they probably don't give him the opportunity, you know, or the power to take those things away and to say that you're just not going to be doing this during this period of time. So Nathan, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, he can take the battle head on if he wants to, and I've watched Brian as he interacts with people and how he does it, and you can take that battle head on if you want to, but you know exactly what you're going to get if you try to force a team to do something. So what I try to do is look for somebody that can become your ally, the people on the team, your team captain, whoever it is. You try to get those people to get really involved and get them to come up with the boundaries. Get them to come up with the rule that, hey, there's no cell phone use until after we're out of the locker room. So when we get into the locker room, it's just us interacting, that kind of stuff. I that's what I try to do, is get the team bought in and say, look, here's one of the struggles I'm seeing. We're not a team. We'll never win this way. We'll never do well. We'll never feel good at the end of the game because we're doing this other stuff. You get them bought in, and you get them to be, the ones that are going around saying, hey, this is what, we're not doing cell phones in here anymore. We're doing after. And, just that the arena that he's in is fantastic. And I watch Brian do that with different people. He's not going to go in and say, this is what you have to do, because it just always comes out bad. Instead, he allows them to talk and express, and what do they want, and what do they want it to look like? What are some guidelines that they can come up with that will make it better?
That's great. So he's making them part of the process. It's a lot easier to get somebody to follow that if they were part of the process to begin with. I think that makes perfect sense. Now, I got a question in regards to warning signs. Now, the prior question really talked about a child that was, or not really a child, a 17-year-old that went from straight A's to, it doesn't say how far they dropped off, but they give the impression that it dropped off significantly and quickly. And one of the things that I find with many of the families that I'm talking to or that I'm working with, either because we're transporting their child or because we're trying to locate them, is they're saying that, I wish I could see some warning signs. I didn't, or they'd say, I don't understand what happened. I didn't see this coming. So, I mean, maybe you can share with some of them, what are some of the warning signs that parents can start realizing that you're starting to head down this path?
You mean prior to them getting to that spot?
Exactly. Yeah, just some of the warning signs. I mean, because again, most of the time, once it's happened, they know something's wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean they know what to do, but we know something's wrong. So,
I would say there's a bunch of little things you kind of look for prior to, and I think that's mostly parents know. I say this a lot, that parent intuition is a big deal. I would say most of the time parents know something's going on prior to. We just don't confront it, we don't address it, or we just try to say, oh, it's just this or it's just that, just a bad day, or that we try to excuse it. But I would say most parents know, but there are little things. If they're overly emotional about things that they shouldn't be, the example, and probably every parent in the world's going to say, oh, yeah, that's my kid. They come home and you say, hey, how was school? And they say, fine, shut up, why y'all's bugging me? And they, slam the door and walk off, Obviously it wasn't fine. Obviously something else was going on. So you got to connect with them. You got to figure out what's going on. If they're secluding themselves way too much, Brian kind of touched on this, you kind of touched on this, that they're spending a ton of time on the computer, but not a lot of time hanging out with their friends or not a lot of time doing stuff. I would say it's a pretty big warning sign. If you're starting to feel like, or if your child is starting to convince you that you're crazy, that's a pretty big warning sign. And I get this, you know, it's funny the way that the kids will do this, you know, if they've taken something or they've done something wrong and you say, hey, I know this happened. And like, no, you just forgot. You just forgot that you had that $20 in there. No, that's not, you know, and so if you're starting to think, maybe I'm going crazy, there's probably something else that's going on. If you're scared, if you don't want to talk to your kids about something, if you're afraid to bring up an issue, I'd say that's a huge warning sign for you. You know, that fear is trying to tell you that, yeah, something's going on. That's why you don't want to address it. You know, feeling helpless, you're worried that your kids are using drugs, but you don't know how to confront it or address it with them, I typically say a pretty big warning signs. You know, that change in behavior, you know, where you're going from straight A's to failing out of school, that's a pretty big warning. But, you know, just even the motivation to go to school, if they're changing that even where, you know, they're okay to go to school and then all of a sudden they don't want to go anymore, I'd say is a, you know, pretty good indicator.
Mm-hmm. And actually, to even add something to that, saying that, it reminded me a little bit that, again, for the parents, that when you brought up the part about, you know, how it just absolutely blow up. And I think part of it is that, first of all, if you say it too much, that's probably why it's annoying, is you've said it 700
yeah.
times. And the second thing might be, it's so general. And one of the things that I did starting when the boys were little, just to make them think, was each day I would ask something different. So it would be, what was the most exciting thing about school today? What was the most interesting thing? What was the craziest thing? What was the most bizarre thing? You know, but just always something that was different, because it made them think. And I think that's something that, if parents do that, maybe it won't, especially if you start early, it won't seem that annoying when they get a little bit older.
Yeah, if you can pull in one specific thing about it, you know, that's more detail-oriented, you'll do 100 times better. If you can say, hey, how was Frank? You know, how was your friend? Or you know, how'd you do on that test? Or most of the time you'll see that kids and, you know, are beating themselves up inside all day long. If they failed a test, they've been beating themselves up all day long. They don't need you to go in and say, you know, how come you didn't do so well on this? I mean, they already know.
Right.
You know, they've already done it. You just need to be able to find that one little piece to connect. I agree. I use the same thing. I, what's the most memorable piece? Or, yeah, just finding anything. Was there anything cool you learned today? Or, yeah.
All right. Now, Brian.
You know, and if I could. Well, go ahead.
Ryan, let me get you one more quick question, because I just looked up. We've only got about 3 minutes. But, I mean, obviously you guys run a facility that is geared towards helping adolescents develop their identity. So before we run out of time, what are some of the methods that you use? And then let's, do that for about 3 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, great question. I mean, one is we try to go back to their core center versus their values and beliefs and what those are, what were they like. We explore that and find out what shaped them up to this point. And then sometimes challenge those beliefs and say, is that something you really believed in, or is that something that was kind of piggybacked by your parents or your guardian? Trying to find an interest in who that person is and build from there. So we really jump in at that level and start to build some basic values and beliefs based on what they bring in and how they feel about relationships, about school, about treatment, and start to shape an identity and, you know, put some identity to everything that they are doing rather than just an image. Are we doing that for identity, or are we doing that for image? We start to separate the two and say, is this more of an image thing that we're doing this? Is this more of who we really are? You know, kind of going back to the question there about, you know, how do parents identify these students? I also think the parent needs to look at, well, what's bothering them? What are our beliefs and value system that's causing us to not like what the student's doing? Is it incongruent with what we grew up with or don't like? Is that what's causing the conflicts we confront because they're not the same or they don't believe the same as we do? So I think one is the parents have to identify as, who are we? What do we believe in? And what do we want to teach our kids to be, or adolescents to be like, or have certain values or traditions? these students coming in here seem to have a kind of a mixed match, like I say, from guardians to online to extended family to whoever that says this is the way it should be done. So being able to be confident of who you are and what you believe in and what you can do and what your abilities and interests are, and as a staff be able to support that and encourage that and be able to build on that. So there's a lot of self-discovery, a lot of positive information given to them, and opportunities for them to build their identity and truly who they are and what their true interests are, and to build on that and grow with that. And that just takes good care and concern and constant care for these students and accountability.
Well,
That develops a culture. So.
Okay, and I was just going to say, I wish we had more time because, I mean, I think that really cuts right to what it is that you guys are doing and what these kids need. And I want to add one more thing to it, because when I was there, there was a word that many of the young people that I spoke to said. They talked about accountability, and that stayed with me because it's such a great thing. You know, whatever it is that we talked about, and I might ask why, and they said, because I'm accountable for it. And I thought that was really, really a positive step. So again, guys, thank you so much. I wish we had more time. If you want to get more information, go to www.schools.org. Ryan, ask for Nathan. Take a look at what they've got. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. And
thank you.
Keep up the good
Thanks,
work.
Alan.
All right. Thank
Thanks.
You. Take care. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.